Chapter 136. Conclusion of the enterprise of Mr. Jonas and his friend. Did no man passing through the dim streets shrink without knowing why, when he came stealing up behind them? As he glided on, had no child in its sleep an indistinct perception of a guilty shadow falling on its bed, that troubled its innocent rest? Did no dog howl, and strive to break its rattling chain, that it might tear him? No burrowing rat, scenting the work he had in hand, essay to gnaw a passage after him, that it might hold a greedy revel at the feast of his providing? When he looked back, across his shoulder, was it to see, if his quick footsteps still fell dry upon the moldy pavement, or were already moist, and clogged with the red mire, that stained the naked feet of Cain? He shaped his course for the main western road, and soon reached it, riding a part of the way, then alighting and walking on again. He traveled for a considerable distance upon the roof of a stagecoach, which came up while he was afoot, and when it turned out of his road, bribed the driver of a return post chaise to take him on with him, and then made across the country at a run, and saved a mile or two, before he struck again into the road. At last, as his plan was, he came up with a certain lumbering, slow, night coach, which stopped wherever it could, and was stopping then at a public house, while the guard and coachman ate and drank within. He bargained for a seat outside this coach, and took it. And he quitted it no more until it was within a few miles of its destination, but occupied the same place all night. All night. It is a common fancy, that nature seems to sleep by night. It is a false fancy, as who should know better than he? The fishes slumbered in the cold, bright, glistening streams and rivers, perhaps, and the birds roosted on the branches of the trees, and in their stalls and pastures beasts were quiet, and human creatures slept. But what of that, when the solemn night was watching, when it never winked, when its darkness watched no less than its light? The stately trees, the moon and shining stars, the softly stirring wind, the overshadowed lane, the broad, bright countryside, they all kept watch. There was not a blade of growing grass or corn, but watched, and the quieter it was, the more intent and fixed its watch upon him seemed to be. And yet he slept. Riding on among those sentinels of God, he slept, and did not change the purpose of his journey. If he forgot it in his troubled dreams, it came up steadily, and woke him. But it never woke him to remorse, or to abandonment of his design. He dreamed at one time, that he was lying calmly in his bed, thinking of a moonlight night and the noise of wheels, when the old clerk put his head in at the door, and beckoned him. At this signal he arose immediately, being already dressed in the clothes he actually wore at that time, and accompanied him into a strange city, where the names of the streets were written on the walls in characters quite new to him, which gave him no surprise or uneasiness, for he remembered in his dream to have been there before. Although these streets were very precipitous, insomuch that to get from one to another it was necessary to descend great heights by ladders that were too short, and ropes that moved deep bells, and swung and swayed as they were clung to, the danger gave him little emotion beyond the first thrill of terror, his anxieties being concentrated on his dress, which was quite unfitted for some festival that was about to be holden there, and in which he had come to take a part. Already, great crowds began to fill the streets, and in one direction myriads of people came rushing down an interminable perspective, strewing flowers and making way for others on white horses, when a terrible figure started from the throng, and cried out that it was the last day for all the world. The cry being spread, there was a wild hurrying on to judgment. And the press became so great, that he and his companion, who was constantly changing, and was never the same man 2 minutes together, though he never saw one man come or another go, stood aside in a porch, fearfully surveying the multitude, in which there were many faces that he knew, and many that he did not know, but dreamed he did. When all at once a struggling head rose up among the rest, livid and deadly, but the same as he had known it, and denounced him as having appointed that direful day to happen. They closed together. As he strove to free the hand in which he held a club, and strike the blow he had so often thought of, he started to the knowledge of his waking purpose, and the rising of the sun. The sun was welcome to him. There were life and motion, and a world astir, to divide the attention of day. It was the eye of night, of wakeful, watchful, silent, and attentive night, with so much leisure for the observation of his wicked thoughts, that he dreaded most. There is no glare in the night. Even glory shows too small advantage in the night, upon a crowded battlefield. How then shows glory's blood relation, bastard murder? Aye. He made no compromise, and held no secret with himself now. Murder. He had come to do it. Let me get down here, he said, short of the town, eh? Observed the coachman. I may get down where I please, I suppose? You got up to please yourself, and may get down to please yourself. It won't break our hearts to lose you, and it wouldn't have broken them if we'd never found you. Be a little quicker. That's all. The guard had alighted, and was waiting in the road to take his money. In the jealousy and distrust of what he contemplated, he thought this man looked at him with more than common curiosity. What are you staring at? Said Jonas. Not at a handsome man, returned the guard. If you want your fortune told, I'll tell you a bit of it. You won't be drowned. That's a consolation for you. Before he could retort or turn away, the coachman put an end to the dialogue by giving him a cut with his whip, and bidding him get out for a surly dog. The guard jumped up to his seat at the same moment, and they drove off, laughing, leaving him to stand in the road, and shake his fist at them. He was not displeased though, on second thoughts, to have been taken for an ill-conditioned common country fellow, but rather congratulated himself upon it as a proof that he was well disguised. Wandering into a copse by the roadside, but not in that place, 2 or 3 miles off, he tore out from a fence a thick, hard, knotted stake, and, sitting down beneath a hayrick, spent some time in shaping it, in peeling off the bark, and fashioning its jagged head with his knife. The day passed on. Noon, afternoon, evening, sunset. At that serene and peaceful time, 2 men, riding in a gig, came out of the city by a road not much frequented. It was the day on which Mr. Pecksniff had agreed to dine with Montague. He had kept his appointment, and was now going home. His host was riding with him for a short distance, meaning to return by a pleasant track, which Mr. Pecksniff had engaged to show him, through some fields. Jonas knew their plans. He had hung about the inn yard while they were at dinner, and had heard their orders given. They were loud and merry in their conversation, and might have been heard at some distance, far above the sound of their carriage wheels or horses' hoofs. They came on noisily, to where a stile and footpath indicated their point of separation. Here they stopped. It's too soon. Much too soon, said Mr. Pecksniff. But this is the place, my dear sir. Keep the path, and go straight through the little wood you'll come to. The path is narrower there, but you can't miss it. When shall I see you again? Soon, I hope? I hope so, replied Montague. Good night. Good night. And a pleasant ride. So long as Mr. Pecksniff was in sight, and turned his head at intervals to salute him, Montague stood in the road smiling, and waving his hand. But when his new partner had disappeared, and this show was no longer necessary, he sat down on the stile with looks so altered, that he might have grown 10 years older in the meantime. He was flushed with wine, but not gay. His scheme had succeeded, but he showed no triumph. The effort of sustaining his difficult part before his late companion had fatigued him, perhaps, or it may be that the evening whispered to his conscience, or it may be, as it has been, that a shadowy veil was dropping round him, closing out all thoughts but the presentiment and vague foreknowledge of impending doom. If there be fluids, as we know there are, which, conscious of a coming wind, or rain, or frost, will shrink and strive to hide themselves in their glass arteries, may not that subtle liquor of the blood perceive, by properties within itself, that hands are raised to waste and spill it, and in the veins of men run cold and dull as his did, in that hour? So cold, although the air was warm, so dull, although the sky was bright, that he rose up shivering from his seat, and hastily resumed his walk. He checked himself as hastily, undecided whether to pursue the footpath, which was lonely and retired, or to go back by the road. He took the footpath. The glory of the departing sun was on his face. The music of the birds was in his ears. Sweet wild flowers bloomed about him. Thatched roofs of poor men's homes were in the distance, and an old gray spire, surmounted by a cross, rose up between him and the coming night. He had never read the lesson which these things conveyed. He had ever mocked and turned away from it. But, before going down into a hollow place, he looked round, once, upon the evening prospect, sorrowfully. Then he went down, 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 into the dell. It brought him to the wood, a close, thick, shadowy wood, through which the path went winding on, dwindling away into a slender sheep track. He paused before entering, for the stillness of this spot almost daunted him. The last rays of the sun were shining in, aslant, making a path of golden light along the stems and branches in its range, which, even as he looked, began to die away, yielding gently to the twilight that came creeping on. It was so very quiet that the soft and stealthy moss about the trunks of some old trees seemed to have grown out of the silence and to be its proper offspring. Those other trees which were subdued by blasts of wind in winter time, had not quite tumbled down, but being caught by others, lay all bare and scathed across their leafy arms, as if unwilling to disturb the general repose by the crash of their fall. Vistas of silence opened everywhere, into the heart and innermost recesses of the wood, beginning with the likeness of an aisle, a cloister, or a ruin open to the sky, then tangling off into a deep green rustling mystery, through which gnarled trunks, and twisted boughs, and ivy-covered stems, and trembling leaves, and bark-stripped bodies of old trees stretched out at length, were faintly seen in beautiful confusion. As the sunlight died away, and evening fell upon the wood, he entered it. Moving, here and there a bramble or a drooping bough which stretched across his path, he slowly disappeared. At intervals a narrow opening showed him passing on, or the sharp cracking of some tender branch denoted where he went. Then, he was seen or heard no more. Never more beheld by mortal eye, or heard by mortal ear, one man excepted. That man, parting the leaves and branches on the other side, near where the path emerged again, came leaping out soon afterwards. What had he left within the wood, that he sprang out of it, as if it were a hell? The body of a murdered man. In one thick solitary spot, it lay among the last year's leaves of oak and beech, just as it had fallen headlong down. Sopping and soaking in among the leaves that formed its pillow, oozing down into the boggy ground, as if to cover itself from human sight, forcing its way between and through the curling leaves, as if those senseless things rejected, and force were it, and were coiled up in abhorrence. Went a dark, dark stain that dyed the whole summer night from earth to heaven. The doer of this deed came leaping from the wood so fiercely, that he cast into the air a shower of fragments of young boughs, torn away in his passage, and fell with violence upon the grass. But he quickly gained his feet again, and keeping underneath a hedge with his body bent, went running on towards the road. The road once reached, he fell into a rapid walk, and set on toward London. And he was not sorry for what he had done. He was frightened when he thought of it, when did he not think of it, but he was not sorry. He had had a terror and dread of the wood, when he was in it, but being out of it, and having committed the crime, his fears were now diverted, strangely, to the dark room he had left shut up at home. He had a greater horror, infinitely greater, of that room than of the wood. Now that he was on his return to it, it seemed beyond comparison more dismal and more dreadful than the wood. His hideous secret was shut up in the room, and all its terrors were there. To his thinking, it was not in the wood at all. He walked on for 10 miles, and then stopped at an alehouse for a coach, which he knew would pass through, on its way to London, before long, and which he also knew was not the coach he had traveled down by, for it came from another place. He sat down outside the door here, on a bench, beside a man who was smoking his pipe. Having called for some beer, and drunk, he offered it to his companion, who thanked him, and took a draught. He could not help thinking that, if the man had known all, he might scarcely have relished drinking out of the same cup with him. A fine night, master. Said this person. And a rare sunset. I didn't see it. Was his hasty answer. Didn't see it? Returned the man. How the devil could I see it, if I was asleep? Asleep. The man appeared surprised by his unexpected irritability, and saying no more, smoked his pipe in silence. They had not sat very long, when there was a knocking within. What's that? Cried Jonas. Can't say, I'm sure, replied the man. He made no further inquiry, for the last question had escaped him in spite of himself. But he was thinking, at the moment, of the closed-up room, of the possibility of their knocking at the door on some special occasion, of their being alarmed at receiving no answer, of their bursting it open, of their finding the room empty, of their fastening the door into the court, and rendering it impossible for him to get into the house without showing himself in the garb he wore, which would lead to rumor, rumor to detection, detection to death. At that instant, as if by some design and order of circumstances, the knocking had come. It still continued, like a warning echo of the dread reality he had conjured up. As he could not sit and hear it, he paid for his beer and walked on again. And having slunk about, in places unknown to him all day, and being out at night, in a lonely road, in an unusual Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.